Building a great culture of sales and marketing alignment is a top priority for any revenue executive. And it's not just about how do you make that work in principle, it's how do you drive it down into the organization and work through the most key elements of your go-to-market motion, things like messaging and positioning and differentiation, things like orchestrating the customer journey between touch points managed by marketing and touch points managed by sales, and really taking that underlying philosophy and transforming it into the DNA of your go-to-market motion and how you serve the customer that you're trying to win. This is the type of topics that we're talking about on the Modern Revenue Executive, where we bring together world-class marketing, e-commerce, and contact center sales leaders to talk about the cutting edge of what consumer brands are doing to attract and retain customers in the age of AI. Today, I'm excited to be joined by Cliff Dinwiddie, who's the CMO of Kinetic, and his partner in crime, Lorenzo Clark, who's the National VP and Head of Sales, who works alongside him. And you're going to see this amazing culture of sales and marketing collaboration that these two individuals share, and the way that they've built that into the practices of how they run go-to-market sales and marketing at Connecticut. Today, you're going to see how Cliff and Lorenzo have built this spirit of collaboration into the very DNA of their go-to-market motion at Kinetic, and how they're using that to drive successful growth and differentiation in a world where the consumer buying journey is changing every single day thanks to AI. So join us now in our conversation with Cliff and Lorenzo and talking about Kinetic and sales and marketing alignment.
This episode is brought to you by Invoca. When marketing meets AI meets human conversations, revenue happens. Invoca's platform gives marketing, sales, and customer experience teams complete visibility into the buyer journey, from click to conversion, creating better experiences that drive real revenue results. Discover how modern brands are scaling revenue at Invoca.com.
Cliff and Lorenzo, great to have you on the show. Welcome, and thanks for joining us today.
Glad to be here.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Well, there's been a recurring theme in many of the conversations that we've had on the podcast, as well as the conversations I've had with revenue executives, which is sales and marketing alignment. It's an age-old topic. And one of my goals in this is to go from talking about it at the hypothetical level, it's sort of in principles, to practical day-to-day applications. And what does that mean with you all and the working relationship that you two have, Cliff in marketing, Lorenzo being in sales? But I do think it's important to start from a first principles point of view on how you as revenue executives view the world and how you view the relationship between sales and marketing. So Lorenzo, if you don't mind, I'd love if you can share with us a little bit about your point of view, where that point of view was forged, how it was forged, and how you approach the sales and marketing relationship and your day-to-day work.
Absolutely. I'd be glad to. So my philosophy on marketing and sales alignment is centered around what I would call seamless integration, where both teams work hand in hand towards shared objectives. So during my time, when I was at Red Ventures is, it's a data company now. However, when I was there, when we first started, it was a customer acquisitions company. And that's where I really learned the value of data-driven collaboration. We implemented systems where marketing campaigns were directly informed by sales feedback, which back then was foreign. Unfortunately, it's still foreign to some people, get on the train. But it really allowed us to tailor our messages towards our customers in real time, right? And I think this practical approach not only enhanced effectiveness, but also fostered a culture of mutual respect and synergy, you know, between marketing and sales. And so for us, it was about creating transparency, setting shared goals, and really establishing continuous feedback loops to really ensure that both teams feel invested in each other's success. And so this alignment really turned our theological strategies into impactful actions that really drove exceptional business outcomes.
Yeah. And one of the things that I always find interesting as I speak to Red Ventures alums, for those of you who aren't familiar with Red Ventures, they're a business that essentially would come to a C-suite and say, hey, we can provide complementary, supplementary, outsourced customer acquisition, sort of combination of sales and marketing for you. And one of the things I always find interesting, Red Ventures folks, is in big enterprise brands, you'll have marketing over here, you'll have sales over here. They're very disconnected. There's a lot of work that has to happen to bring the two together. Whereas at Red Ventures, by definition, you're all sitting underneath the same roof. You're reporting up to the exact same leaders. The connectivity between those two is fundamentally different than what you oftentimes see in an enterprise brand. So, you know, Zoe, as I've worked with you over the years, I've always found it fascinating to speak to people who had operating experience at Red Ventures, because you've seen what it looks like when sales and marketing are truly joined at the hip in a very collaborative way. And then Cliff, I found it fascinating when you talked a little bit about your experience in joining the Kinetic team and the Unity team, about how you thought about sales and marketing as you came into the organization and what were you looking for in your next role and where you wanted to have impact.
So a couple of things. As I was being recruited to take this job, we got down to the final interview and the outcome was the outcome that I wanted. Hey, come join us. My response was, well, before we do that, it's really important for me. I want to have a discussion with the senior sales leadership team. Because in the absence of that interlock, and Zoe was calling it seamless integration, I absolutely agree. But in the absence of that interlock, nothing works as well as it can or should. So it's important, at least from my perspective, I know this is true for my partner, Lorenzo, it's important that those two functional areas really be aligned. So quite frankly, before I accepted this role, I really needed to have some communication with the senior sales leader. Thankfully, I did. Thankfully, that discussion went as I had hoped. And we've seen the benefits of that. Part of, in addition to sort of that integration, I think there's some cultural work that needs to happen. It is really easy for a marketing team to point to a metric, a click-through rate or a reach or a SOV metric or something like that. And marketers, understandably so, want to say, yay, look at that. That's great. What a fantastic metric that is. That's a great metric. But if the score on the scoreboard, if those sales numbers are not where we want them to be, none of us is in a position to do a touchdown dance, because in the absence of that scoreboard being what we want it to be, your SOV number is sort of interesting. That click-through rate is sort of interesting, but we are all here working together with our partners in sales to sell service. That is the scoreboard that we've all got to keep our eyes on. And so I think in addition to the interlock with those leaders, there's cultural work that's really important that needs to happen in both teams to make sure that we're all oriented to a single score. That's the metric that we all need to be pointed at. And everything else is a contributor to that big metric.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And for the benefit of the audience, Lorenzo is a former NFL football player. So you want to see Lorenzo's touchdown dance. You know, Cliff, you brought up a really important point that I think is the stage of career that we're all in. The people that you work with is super important. And the strategic alignment, like when you join a company, you're making a 3, 5, 10-year bet and having understanding that if there's good strategic philosophical alignment between you and your business partners on the executive team, I think is a great call out of something people should be aware of when they're looking at new opportunities, joining new companies. Because if you get that connection right, everything gets to be a lot easier. If you're fundamentally misaligned, my guess is there's going to be a lot of beating your head against the wall over the next couple of years. But I thought that was a great call out. Now, to step back, one of the things that you all do for everybody's benefit, you all are in the telecommunications business. And one of the elements of that is really around differentiation and positioning and messaging. And as we translate the spirit of sales and marketing alignment in theory and in talk down to practical action and how you all make it happen, Cliff, I'd love to hear your take, because positioning and messaging is something that I find marketers have a lot of passion about. They often drive, but then at the end of the day, it's sales who has to live with it and deliver it day to day, especially in person. So I would love to hear, how do you all sort of approach the process of defining messaging and positioning and differentiation in a very noisy marketplace, and then do that in a way that works for both of your teams?
Great question. I think that the headline there is outside in. It is very easy for marketers and sellers, especially in the technology space. We get very attached to all of our acronyms and all of our technology, and our network is this big and the product goes this fast. I think we get, as technologists, we sort of cling to that. And that's where we have, there's sort of this innate desire to start there, except the challenges that people, I don't care if we're talking about consumers or SMB or large enterprise or even wholesale buyers, they're not buying your product. They are not buying your technology. They are buying a solution to their problem. And if you don't start the conversation there, not about your product, but about the solution, the value that you are creating, if you don't start the conversation there, then it's just a bunch of noise. And let's remember, we are already in an, I don't care what sector you're in, we are in a very crowded marketplace. And consumers and businesses are inundated with messaging from all over the place. And in order to cut through, you've got to start the conversation with them, not with the customer, not with us, not with our product that we love, not with our technology that we love, but with the problem that that consumer or business customer is trying to solve. So at Kinetic, that is exactly what all of our messaging is predicated on. I'm not talking about a product. I am talking about a value. People don't buy products. They buy value. They buy solutions to their problems. So that's the way that we do it here at Kinetic. So always starting with that customer first mentality. And then the other thing is, I think that market research, primary and secondary, is really important, right? Because sometimes we think we understand the problems that customers are trying to solve, but we don't always. So I think it's really important to keep a constant cycle of primary and secondary research sort of informing the messaging that we deliver. And of course, as we talked about at the top of this discussion, none of that happens in a secret laboratory in marketing. As we develop this messaging, we test it with our partners in sales, because they're the ones that have to go stand on the front line and deliver this message. They are another really important source of that primary research. They are on the front lines talking to these customers each and every day. They're in a great position to tell us what is top of mind for them. So outside in, not inside out. Start with the customer and then work back to your product. Don't start with your product and technology.
Is there anything you want to contribute in terms of how you all and the sales team participate in influence and shape positioning? Because pretty much every sales leader that I've ever spoken with will always have an opinion about positioning. How do you manage and how do you build that trusted feedback loop back to Cliff and his organization?
Yeah, you know, one of the philosophies that I was able to bring from Red Ventures was the collaboration principle, which is, hey, I can have a great idea in sales, but my CEO would say, hey, look, have you talked to marketing? And the same, marketing had an idea. Hey, have you talked to sales before you even bring it to me? And so that conditioning got us to the point to where we start there. We start with those collaborative workshops where we have this idea that might pop up and we say, look, let's get in, let's talk about it. And then that way both teams can really explore the unique value props and key differentiators. And so I think open dialogue is strongly encouraged along the path as well, because we share our insights across the wall and consumer feedback, and we're shaping our position strategy. That's usually the principles that help shape that position strategy. So then we develop messaging frameworks that really sort of encapsulate all these elements. And that really kind of ensures that we're grounded in reality, you know? So we poke holes in every aspect across the board. Hey, marketing, look at this. Hey, look at the scripting. Hey, look at our sales strategy. Bounce that up against your market research, bounce that up against all the feedback that you're receiving as well. And then that way, that really sort of optimizes how our sales strategy across. And I think it's that consistent message, those consistent key terms, those consistent words that our customers hear, our consumers or prospects hear throughout the journey, whether it's e-com, whether it's sales frontline, whether it's outbound, whether it's door to door, we have those same words that they see in our front end messaging. And we're using those words. It really adds to the brand confidence that we're saying the right things and we're actually being truthful about the value that we're bringing as a product because they've seen that before. And so I think once you put all those things together, this tight collaboration from day zero, constant performance evaluation through reporting to sort of pivot as needed, and then really encouraging open dialogue across the entire journey.
Yeah, there are two things that you said that struck me. One's consumer feedback. Before I was a CEO, I worked in product. And one of the things I would always try to do is bring an engineer along to hear from a customer firsthand about the struggle they were having, because it was one thing for me to sit there and tell an engineer that what she or he had worked on wasn't quite working right. It was completely a different thing from then to hear it from a motivational perspective from the customer firsthand. Also, they came up with better solutions than if I was playing this translation layer. So I totally agree with that. And then I think you talked a little bit about orchestration and consistency across the journey. And I think about the sector that you all work in telecommunications. You all have a pretty complex journey to orchestrate, a combination of have things like TV and video advertising. You have digital, you have the web, you have e-commerce, you have the contact center, you have folks going door to door. Cliff, do you mind just talking a little bit about how you all make that orchestration happen, how you deliver that consistency when it's not a super simple linear path of, hey, I saw something cool on Instagram, I clicked a button, I went to the website, I thought about it for 90 seconds, I bought it because if I don't like it, I can send it back. Like, that journey is pretty linear, pretty short in duration, pretty deterministic. Whereas the world of what you all are doing is just a lot more complicated. The bar's a lot higher, the degree of difficulty. Do you mind talking about how you all help make that happen between sales and marketing in terms of that consistency and that journey in an orchestrated way?
I'll deliver this answer in two parts. First, a framework, and then a practical application, right? So if I think about the buyer's journey in our space, that looks like shop, buy, get, use, pay, and sometimes on the B2B side of our business, renew. A lot of our business is contract free. So that the framework is a pretty standard buyer journey framework. But in terms of practical application, if you think about the business that Lorenzo and I are in, we've got this network out there, and I've got all of these consumer and business customers that are sitting out there on my network. Our job is to sell those customers. And so when I go into, so this is sort of a geography-based play. So before we go to market, we start, for the marketers in the audience here, we sort of start with top of funnel marketing tactics. Think out of home, think connected TV, think some social activities. We start sort of top of funnel to warm the market, to make sure that the market is aware of our brand, and that we are sort of warming that market up. But I don't sell to a market. I sell to individual doors. I sell to individual customers in that market. So warming the market is just the way that we start. Now that I've got the market warmed up, I know who the doors are that I want to convert. So the next thing that I do is I try to warm up the door. Before I send Lorenzo and his door-to-door team to go pull on that door, it's my job to warm that door up so that when Lorenzo's team shows up, someone actually is willing to open the door and have a conversation, right? So warm the market, then we warm the door. And as I'm warming that door, I am delivering a price point that we think is pretty compelling, a little bit better than rack rate. Now, when my partners in sales show up at that door, they are coming and we've already warmed the market. This door is already familiar with who my brand is and what our value proposition is and what that price is. But by the time Lorenzo's team shows up, Lorenzo's bringing a slightly improved value proposition, a slightly improved price. So Lorenzo's team goes and they have had incredible success converting these doors that I'm trying to convert. And in that small number of doors that Lorenzo's team doesn't get converted, then what I do is I go back to that market, back to those doors with door level marketing tactics. Think email, think direct mail, door hangers, things of that nature, with an even better, slightly improved value proposition. So shop, buy, get, use, pay, renew. Think of that as the framework. But in terms of practical application, Lorenzo and I are his team and I, we are doing this very carefully orchestrated dance, right? My job is to soften the ground. My job is to make sure that there is awareness so that by the time Lorenzo's team shows up, it's an easy conversion and he can move on to the next door. So really, this goes back to the very first question that we talked about in this discussion. This is absolutely predicated on the relationship between marketing and sales. I cannot win if my partner in sales, in this case, Lorenzo Clark, is not winning. Lorenzo can't win if I'm not winning. There is one scoreboard, and that's the scoreboard that we are staring at. I hope that's responsive to your question.
Anything you would add there in terms of how you think about the work that Cliff and his team are doing and that impact, frankly, from your perspective on sales effectiveness at the end of the day?
It's just great to have a partner that really understands the concept of allowing the customer to choose how they want to engage with us and just optimizing every entry point that they have at their disposal to choose. And so part of that, I believe, is what we've deemed internally as like grassroots strategy. Like it really is about building alignment from the ground up and just ensuring that each team, each person really understands their role in the customer journey. And so we have customer profiles that we have built over time through our experiences and through their customer experience and their feedback, their NPS scores. And we build our sales strategy to that. And so having, you know, a marketing partner like Cliff who really understands how important that is for us to be able to optimize our sales conversions, because that's ultimately the scoreboard, right? That's the goal. We have a goal of fiber conversions and we're all measured to that goal. And I think part of the charge for Cliff and myself is just to make sure that our entire teams understand that as well, regardless if they come externally with a different point of view, if they come internally from a different leader, like all that is in the past, right? Past can inform what you do in your present and your future. And so today we have that alignment and, you know, it's up to us to keep that going, to continue that continuous communication and building those relationships and creating those feedback loops that are crucial to refining our strategies and improving our alignment. And I couldn't ask for a better partner than Cliff Dinwiddie.
One of the things that I find fascinating about working with you all is you as a team and as an organization, I would say, are a pretty forward-leaning group when it comes to using technology. But what's interesting to me is you use a combination of what an outside-in observer might think of as both very new-school technologies and also kind of old-school technologies. Like I remember, Lorenzo, one of the first time we were talking, you were talking about you had a field team that was going door-to-door, that you were investing more in that. And if I'm hanging out at Google Marketing Live in May with a lot of our partners that we work with at Google, like they're not talking about sending people door to door. They're purely focused on digital. Obviously, you have a contact center infrastructure that you're running in teams there. And then you've got, I know I've spoken and spending time with your e-commerce team. Your e-commerce team is one of the more sophisticated A/B experimentation teams I've ever met with. So I find it fascinating how you all use technology not only in the service of kind of very new age sales and marketing vehicles, but also in maybe modernizing or applying more nuanced and data-driven approaches to things like direct mail, door-to-door field teams, other things that people might think of as like, do people do those things anymore? So I just love to hear maybe two things. One, how do you think about the yin and the yang of the latest AI native, digitally oriented kind of sales and marketing engagement opportunities? And then how do you also think about some of the more traditional things that may be overlooked, but still are really effective in paying the bills, like direct mail, like door-to-door engagement? And how do you technology enable those things to let you get whole new levels of scale out of them? Because clearly you all are a group that's very focused on efficiency. So my read is like, if it ain't working, you ain't using it. And the fact that you all leverage some of these technologies tell me that you have the data that tells you it works. And so I just love to hear, I find that yin and yang kind of interesting and love to hear any perspectives you guys have on this.
I'll maybe take the first swing at that ball, Lorenzo. So one of the things that has been really just fantastic in my experience here at Kinetic is that as it relates to investments in our tech stack, we have got it all. Every piece of tech, and I'm speaking selfishly from a marketing perspective for just a moment. Every piece of AI-enabled technology, we have built it in our stack. And obviously, like everything, you talked about test and learn a moment ago, everything doesn't always work as we would hope, right? So we've got search and intent tools, we've got CDP tool, all of the usual technologies in a marketing tech stack, we've got all of that. Challenge is integrating all of that stuff isn't always as easy as one would hope. So I think from just a pure marketing technology perspective, we make a sizable investment so that we can do this business at scale. You talked about us being sort of a lean and efficient organization. That is true. Part of the way that we can be lean and efficient is through the use of technology, because it helps us sort of scale up our effort. And on the test and learn front, there are amazing things. My team is doing amazing things that blow me away every single day. We have really robust test and learn on our .com property and our cart specifically. We test this thing from every angle, and it's not just on the .com, on the messaging that Lorenzo's team takes to the door or uses in an inside sales team. We use AI to help us sort of test and learn which one of these messages works better. Should our message be a message that is about technology and throughput and percent uptime, or should our message be something that's about, oh, we're here to help you? Those are very different messages. It's the same solution, but the messaging is different. So AI helps us sort of sift through a giant pile of data to pull out the insights that we need to make those decisions. That happens in every aspect of our marketing practice. And interestingly, those things that I think you sort of think of as old school, we all do, I think it's really fascinating what Lorenzo and his team have done to take some of that stuff that might feel a little bit more old school and use AI to really enhance the efficacy of those efforts. Mr. Clark, what would you add to that?
I would say that is a perfect opening to what we do internally in our sales teams, or what we sort of challenge ourselves to do, which is, hey, we know traditionally these things work. Now, let's use the technology that we have at our disposal today to enhance what we're doing. And my wife is always amazed that we still fail door to door. She's always amazed at the success we have, you know, door to door. And so when I was able to be afforded the opportunity to lead door to door team, I wanted to just do things differently. And so it was a perfect opportunity to really sort of just wipe the whiteboard clean and just come forward and say, hey, look, how should we do this? How can we bring this door-to-door strategy, which is clearly effective because 90% of the companies in our space do it, but how can we do it more effectively? So we even add, like, there's, when you're door-to-door, you're all over the country, all over our footprint. And so part of the charge was, hey, look, how can we use technology to get access to what's happening in those interactions at the door? So we added technology to provide us access to that. We have technology to provide us to record those interactions to help our reps get better, because essentially they get better, they make more money, it's better retention. We're doing things that other people aren't doing. So that helps also with retention, but it also gives us access to what's going on at the door. So now we have those conversations that we can run through our AI tool to see how people are responding to our sales approach and our sales scripting and our sales strategy at the door. And 90% of people aren't doing that in the door-to-door space, but specifically. So we pride ourselves on just being innovative from that perspective and using the data analytics and the tools sort of help enable us to derive more actionable insights with that data, and helps us feed that data and those interactions back to Cliff and team to help inform the front-end marketing as well, right? In those DMs that we kind of talked about, those direct mailers that we sent out. Hey, here are some of the words that we're using at the door that people are reacting positively to, because we have a 30% conversion at the door, which industry standard is like 15%, but I'm not bragging. Hey, bragging if it's true. It's not bragging if it's true.
That part of the price of entry of being on the show is you get to brag a little bit.
Just a little bit. And so I say all that to say, hey, we're doing things that other people aren't doing. We're being innovative. We're using technology. We're using AI, trying to stay in the forefront. And so it's my coach has always said, Coach Robinson always said, look, it's better to be the one who's being chased than the one who's doing the chasing. And so we'll continue to partner, you know, with our marketing partners and stay ahead of the rest of the competitors who are trying to chase us, especially in this part of the space.
Yeah, to me, what's super interesting about this is it's this unique element of taking what are perceived as old school tactics, but using them in a super refined surgical way that completely changes the economics, right? Like if I am, you know, without data and without clear strategic director and spending a bunch of human capital in my contact center, spending a bunch of human capital in my door-to-door teams and treating them in a very broad-based way, like the economics that aren't going to make sense. But my sense from talking with you all is you're able to use data, precision targeting, and kind of applying that unique human capital in a surgical way. Back to Cliff, you mentioned it earlier around like you've given the amount of air cover, you brought the consumer along the journey. And so now when you send in someone from Lorenzo's team, you can do that with a very high level of confidence about their ability to influence the journey at that unique point, as opposed to a blunt instrument that we might have done 15 or 20 years ago, which is, I don't really have any sense of how ready to buy any of these people are. I'm just going to sweep through a neighborhood and try to get anybody I can, kind of the same way I did when I was in elementary school and I was on like fundraising drives. But that's to me what's so interesting about you all is I think of you all as not just a technology business, not just a people human capital business. You're the super interesting hybrid of the two and using your technology to sort of supercharge your human engagement at these precise precision points where A, it makes a difference, and B, it can be cost effective, which I find super interesting.
Yeah, I think you got it right. The other log that I would throw on this fire, yes, these tools are absolutely critical to our success. And Lorenzo was actually quite humble when he described what he and his team are doing to sort of bring the power of big data and AI to the modern sales distribute. They have done amazing work there. I've never seen anything quite like it. And yes, on that marketing interlock, and I said something at the top of our discussion about culture. Just one other log to throw on this fire, Greg. You know, if you think about the tone and the tenor of the conversation that we are having right now, we haven't rehearsed this. Lorenzo and I, this is our actual relationship. We talk multiple times every single day. We have really worked to carefully curate a culture here where there is this trust and mutual respect, not just between Lorenzo and I, that part's actually pretty easy, but with, you know, he leads a large team of people, as do I, and making sure that all the way down through the organization that everyone has got a wide and shared understanding that we need each other to be successful. So what you feel on this call is what you would feel if you were to be a fly on the wall in one of our most senior level executive meetings when we're trying to solve some complex problem. We are genuine friends. These are not people working at, you know, cross purposes. This is a team of people that are working toward a shared, widely understood goal. And when you line it up that way and give people the permission to show up as their authentic selves and actually encourage that and bring a little shenanigans into the mix, I think it lowers stress and it improves productivity. And we see it in our results. We can actually see the effect of this interlock that we started this discussion. We can see it in our results. Yes, on the technology. Yes, on AI. Yes, on messaging that's outside in. But, you know, you've got to have the right culture. And I'll be honest, in a several previous lives ago, I had a job not unlike Lorenzo's job. I think it's really important for senior marketing leaders to have at some point in their career, carry a bag. You don't understand what that is until you've done it. You don't understand the incredible stress and pressure as that quota clock continues to run. Once you've had that experience, you show up and you think about this in a very different way. Same is true in reverse too. I think sales leaders who've had some marketing experience also really important. I am really lucky, Greg. I get to work with this guy who is by far and away one of the most talented senior sales executives I have encountered in my 35 years doing this. And the teams, we are so proud of our teams because of the way that they work together.
Well, given the love fest that's going on, I've got one other question for you too, though. So I'll share one of my experiences as CEO. One of the things that I found in trying to foster a really productive sales and marketing relationship, this is probably 3 or 4 years ago at Invoca. I would say at Invoca, one of the opportunities for improvement we have sometimes is we're a very collaborative oriented company, but sometimes that means we don't have enough room for fact-based disagreement. And I'm curious to see if you two guys have had this experience. One of the things I said to our head of sales and head of marketing is every time there would be sort of the contentious topic that would come up, oftentimes it would, in a group meeting, I'd be like, hey, we'll take that offline and we'll work through it. And one of the things I said to them is I said, I'm really happy that the two of you have a productive working relationship together. That is great. If we want to take this to the next level, I need you to demonstrate that your teams, that you can disagree based on facts and have a spirited discussion without having it turn ill-spirited and hostile. And I need you to model that behavior because the teams need to know it's okay. Like, let's go back to positioning and differentiation. That is at the core of everything that a company does and how it builds product, markets product, and sells product. And if you have a passionate point of view, I want to hear it. And I want to hear it from both sides of the aisle. So is there anything that you all have done to model what constructive tension looks like so that your teams can see not only you're philosophically aligned, but if Cliff thinks the apple is dark red and Zoe thinks the apple is light red with a tinge of green, it's okay to have that kind of debate too.
Yeah. And so I'll be totally transparent and pull the covers off. So one of the first things that Cliff did in one of our first meetings that we had in his role as CMO is ask the question, hey, what are we trying to solve in these sessions? Because we have these biweekly meetings and it's sales and marketing and there's a lot of human capital on this meeting. And so he said, hey, what are we trying to solve? Because it sounds like that we're just doing reporting and updates and we're like high-fiving and slapping each other on the back for doing a good job. But what problems are we trying to solve? There's a lot of people on this call. We have the right audience to be able to solve problems and solve issues. And so I was super appreciative of him bringing that up because I missed it myself. I had gotten into that same habit that we've been doing that meeting, that cadence for a year and a half, 2 years, right? And so just it takes someone sometimes to come in with a different perspective to be able to recognize those things and to be able to put us on the right track. Another thing that we do is we collaborate on the side. So we have this thing called IM, it's Microsoft Teams. And so sometimes we'll message each other to say, hey, look, I'm thinking about taking it down this path. What do you think? Right? So we can make sure that we're aligned. And surprise, surprise, 99% we're aligned, you know, on things because we talk all the time, right? And I think that communication and that relationship keeps us aligned on those things, you know, and we talk through them, but we both foster those type of conversations on in those sessions. Hey, this is the time to work it out, but we just work everything out. So when we leave this room, we're all in the same accord, right? It's the same thing that happened in the locker room. We might have had a horrible first half, but we'll come together and we'll say, look, we need to fix it right now. Is everyone on the same accord? Yes. We know what the mission is? Yes. Let's go execute the mission. And at that point, it's just strictly execution, you know? And so I say that to say, hey, we have a relationship to where we work things out as the leaders of the groups and make sure we're all aligned and that we force everyone else to talk about them and get to where we believe that they should be. And then when we leave that, it's all collaborative, but it feels like that's a working session where we work everything out in that session. And now we have our charge to go out and run to the goal.
I agree with everything Lorenzo said. The other thing I would say is this, two things. One, my agreement isn't always required for my alignment. There are going to be some issues where I see red and someone else sees green. That's totally fine. As long as we all agree as business partners, we are going to march down this road for this set of reasons, even if I see it a little bit differently. We all have to, especially those of us in senior leadership roles, be able to pull ourselves out of this. This isn't about me. This isn't about Lorenzo. This is about this mission that we are on. This is about a much larger goal. So that agreement alignment thing, one and two, I think especially for senior leaders, it is really important. You used the word model earlier in our discussion. I intentionally point out in front of large groups of people, especially those that report to me, when I think I'm wrong. It's that kind of vulnerability, I think, creates a safety, a safe space that everyone can. This isn't a contest. I don't actually want to be the smartest guy in the room. I want all of you to be the smartest people in the room. And if you pull your ego and your positional power, which isn't real anyway, when you pull all of that out of it and everyone is just focused independent of level and title consciousness, none of that is helpful. We all just focus on this goal. So I would say we don't always have to see it the same way to align around a path forward. And especially those of us in leadership, we need to be willing to be wrong in front of a group. And we need to pull ourselves and our ego out of this and let these incredible humans who we have the honor of leading, let them shine. They are the geniuses. They are the ones that are working these miracles. I just tell the bad jokes around here, Greg.
Well, I'll add more big to that too. I've seen myself. I could not agree more, Cliff. And one of the things that I find the challenge is anytime I'm in a room as an executive, people will tend to put a lot of credence and authority behind my opinion. But I'll try to explicitly state, like, there are some things about a software business where I'm an expert. I have a significant amount of expertise. And I'll let you know when I'm an expert. There are a lot of things about a software business that I don't know any better than any of the rest of you. And I don't want you all to think that just because I'm an executive and a CEO that I know what's best. And so for me, trying to label when am I coming from a position of expertise and experience versus when am I coming from, I do believe one of my jobs as a CEO and executive is I need to have an opinion on something at any given point of time, whatever data I have. But to try to give you a sense of how expert that opinion is and how expert that opinion may not be. But I think part of what makes that successful, again, observing from the outside the culture that you all have, is that my sense is there is not a whole lot of religious battle to how you run the business. You are a test and learn data and analytics driven business. And ultimately, at the end of the day, that's what wins. And I can have the strongest religious belief, philosophical belief about a certain thing we should be doing. And that goes into the bag of tricks that you all will try on the go-to-market side. But at the end of the day, what proves the point is the data, the analytics, and the customer experience and the results, as opposed to me banging my hands on the table that, like, this is what we should or should not be doing. That's kind of my perception from the outside in, too.
It's absolutely true. When I was 25, I knew everything.
Well, now that you're 30, you learned a little bit, Cliff.
I wish I was 30. Now, and whatever your title or position is, I specifically want, I need, I encourage people to tell me where I'm wrong. Push back, challenge me, not because I want to have a fight with you, but because I need that feedback. This isn't a command and control kind of thing. This is a team of humans trying to do something amazing.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was trying to talk about a little bit previously, which is, hey, yeah, we make data-driven decisions. And once we get to that goal, that outcome, that target, we need four goals in it. And we need to have a diversity of thought and a diversity of voice to be able to position ourselves in the best possible position to reach that goal, whatever it might be.
This is a good segue to my two closing questions to have some fun. So this last 5 or 10 minutes, frankly, has nothing to do with marketing, has nothing to do with sales, has everything to do with executive leadership and the people that you work with and how do you get the most out of that. I'll start, Cliff, with you, and then I'll go to Zoe. Question number one, is there any resource, a book, a podcast, an event you've attended that has really inspired you as an executive, as a leader, and sort of changed the way that you think about how you interact with your team and your peers and everybody else that you work with on a day-to-day basis?
I didn't know this question was coming, Greg.
This was definitely not rehearsed, and that's the point.
Yeah. Interestingly, so I've got all the marketing responsibility here over the years, and I host sales kickoff meetings and other big events like that. We often hire a keynote speaker. There is a guy named Kevin Carroll, who is probably one of the most amazing keynotes I've ever heard. He has this fascinating background. We should provide your listeners a link. He has a fascinating background, a former athletic trainer in the NBA, had this really amazing job at Nike, and his title is Catalyst with a K because his name is Kevin. He tells the most amazing stories about his life and about the importance of play at work, the importance of injecting fun and how play and sport, it's intrinsically a part of all humans and how important it is to bring that in to the workplace. I have found his messaging really informative and transformative. So I would point to Kevin Carroll, who I think is just an amazing guy with an amazing message. And a lot of that thought process, I try to incorporate that into the way that I show up at work every day. And the humans seem to really appreciate that because we're all the same people. I don't care what your job function is or what your title is. We all have the same basic set of needs. So Kevin Carroll is who I would point.
Well, and Cliff, you get bonus points for tying into the sports theme that has come up earlier in the process. Lorenzo, anything pop out for you?
Yeah, people are often surprised that the response I give, you know, because they think it's going to be like maybe Covey or that you subscribe to 10,000 hours or 7 Habits, but it's really the Mamba mentality. It's Kobe Bryant's book. And for me, just the transition from sports, it really sort of encapsulated like the pillars that I believe then that made me successful in sports that have transitioned and to help me be successful in business. It's the passion for what you do every day. It's just being obsessed. Like, I'm obsessed. I know Cliff is on the West Coast, right? And I'm like, oh, he's 2 hours behind me. He's probably still up. You know, I have his idea. Let me run it by him, right? It's just obsession, you know? It's the same thing that Kobe used to do to Jordan. Like, hey, and it's relentlessness. We have to hit this goal. There's objects are just merely something to step over, right? The resilience of it, because in sales, you have to be resilient because your Monday could screw up your rest of your Tuesday, your Wednesday, your Thursday, and your Friday if you don't let that Monday go. And I think a level of fearlessness, whatever we're going through it right now, right? We're going through a merger. And so I think the fearlessness of, hey, look, regardless of what is to come, we're going to overcome it, whatever it is, you know? And so I think that book really speaks to all those different things. And I even recommended it to a recent couple of summits that we've had, and I'm going to continue to. We've had a book club on it, you know, once. And so that book really sort of helped me get on the path to take my business life on to the next level.
Well, that's great. Well, thank you. As I expected this to be a fun conversation, it certainly delivered on that front and spanning a range of topics from everything from customer experience, branding, differentiation, positioning, marketing technology, journey orchestration, to just good old fashioned, how do you be a good leader at work and how do you show up and have fun? Which I agree, Cliff, like life's too short in my own 30 years on the planet, wink, wink. Well, now I've learned spend too much time working to not have fun at work. So I appreciate that and appreciate you too joining us today.
The problem I have with you guys, both of you guys look 30. That's the thing I'm talking about. Those D's, man.
I will share my skincare routine later.
Yes, I need it.
But thank you guys, generally. Really enjoyed the conversation and look forward to continuing to work with you both in the future. So thank you.
Thank you, Greg.
Thank you so much. Love the relationship.
Thank you for listening to the Modern Revenue Executive. Links to any resources mentioned in this episode are in the show notes below. If you enjoyed this show, please give us a 5-star review and don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss out on any future episodes.